versus Merritt. Mr. Comey.
May it please the court. 28 years ago, give or take a few days, this court was called into order by Tom Stuebe. My parents and I stood up and into the room walked Luther Swigert, who swore me in to this very court. And in his remarks to me and my parents at the time, he said, "Champion people, champion the Constitution." And I'm here today to champion the Constitution and Mr. Merritt. About 4 hours ago in Washington, D.C., the time clock clicked to 9 o'clock in the morning, and a vault in the National Archives opened, and an elevator specially designed to lift the Bill of Rights lifted it out of its bomb-proof, you understand, you've been there, lifted it out of its bomb-proof chamber and put it on display for the people of our country to visit. And what is amazing, no matter what day you go there, every day you see yellow school buses in front of that building bringing the children in to give them the promise of American liberty. And American liberty in the Fourth Amendment, which we have delivered to the world both in the French Revolution and in what we consider to be basic human rights, which are enforced by the International Criminal Court in Strasbourg, contains the idea that no search warrant shall issue without probable cause. And I don't know of anyone who didn't pass the high school test on the Constitution, which is, can a search warrant issue without probable cause in the United States? And every high school student answers that question, no.
But that isn't the issue. The issue is what the sanction is if you don't have a valid search warrant, right? So the Supreme Court says, well, it's not always exclusion.
Yes, I understand that, and I find
problem.
I find that amazing, considering that some of the great justices...
Well, we can't overrule the Supreme Court, unfortunately, much as we would like.
I'm not inviting you to do so. I'm merely suggesting that in this case, and certainly in our circuit, since the City of Chicago versus Hampton, when Rich Jolovec got to sit as a defendant downstairs in front of Judge Sam Perry, no prosecutor has been involved in drafting the search warrant himself. As you may remember, that was the case where the search warrant was issued for the search of the Black Panther headquarters, and in the execution of the warrant, many people died. Civil lawsuits followed, and in this circuit, absolute immunity doesn't apply to prosecutors who get involved in the law enforcement side of drafting up search warrants.
Well, why don't you speak to that U.S. versus Carter case, which is a 1993 Seventh Circuit case, where the good faith exception was applied to a prosecutor who drafted the affidavit. How is that case distinguishable from what we have here?
I believe the prosecutor was merely the helper and not the mover. In other words, the officer came to get assistance in what the officer had drafted, presented that to the prosecutor. The prosecutor then said, you might want to change this or add that. But in this particular case, according to the testimony in the district court, the words out of the agent's mouth were, the prosecutor drafted the affidavit. And that's entirely different, because now an exception that was designed to deal with reality back in the days when Shepard versus Massachusetts came in, and also the case involving good faith, Leon, at that time, police officers had eighth grade educations, some of them high school educations, and so they weren't expected to be legally trained. I grew up in a city here where the officers routinely could be on the police force if they got through eighth grade. But that's not the case anymore in America, but I can't change that. But I can tell you that we have an excellently trained prosecutor. He graduated from good schools. He's been an assistant United States attorney. He's an excellent lawyer, and he should have known by looking at this document, especially in light of the district judge's comments, that it was utterly lacking on its face with the indicia of criminality. And if you take a direct quote from the district judge, which can be found in his opinion on the matter, the affidavit contains no suggestion, exculpatory or inculpatory, indicating a link between the financial records and a motive to participate in or aid and abet in the arson. So that's the district judge's finding, and the government doesn't question the rightness of the district judge's finding. If the evidence was sufficient to constitute probable cause, then any time someone had an insurance on a property they owned that was destroyed by arson, the police could search their home and financial records.
Now, we had a magistrate who issued the warrant.
I think, if I can say this gently, many magistrates don't exercise much discretion when they get visited by a friendly law enforcement officer in executing, in obtaining a search warrant. When I was a police officer, I had a list of my favorite judges.
Well, this is Indianapolis, and there aren't that many magistrates you can go and pick and choose, but you can't just...
But you can take certain inferences. This is a city where they have on-duty judges in the state court. They couldn't get a warrant from a state judge.
Did they try?
Well, but it's clear here. They went to the prosecutor's office. If they thought they could get a warrant, they could have gone to any judge.
No, but you had a federal law enforcement.
Well, you also had, if you look at the testimony, you also had the state, too.
The joint.
Right. Well, the way this really comes about is the insurance company not wanting to pay contacts ATF and gets ATF into looking at it, not trusting the ability of the locals. And so now you have, you know, the feds on top of it. But when all is said and done, it starts out as an avoidance of wanting to pay any claim on the property. The investigation goes forward. We know that Indianapolis is a very civilized place. They have judges on duty 24 hours a day to issue warrants. And, of course, you know, you have the magistrate in the building. Now, it may be that he doesn't exercise discretion. There's no record of what he did. Even if he asked any questions when the warrant was approached, when he approached with the warrant and said, "Judge, would you please consider the warrant?" There is no written record of what was said and by whom. And you have the added indicia of reliability when the U.S. attorney accompanies them to get the warrant, especially when the author is there, standing there. Pride in, you know, draftsmanship, pride in the product you have.
Let me just ask you, is there any case, and maybe I've just forgotten it, that says that an agent coming to the prosecutor, because obviously the agent had to give the prosecutor the information, you're not disputing that the agent provided the information for the affidavit.
There's no doubt that the agent
provided the information.
Is an agency relationship, reported to the prosecutor
provided the information. And
yes.
Then do you have a case, a Seventh Circuit case, and as I said, I may have just missed it, that says that that's an improper procedure for an agent to come to an assistant, have the information, give the information to the assistant, and then the assistant then drafts?
No, your thoroughness is true. You didn't miss it. But the problem is that no one's come up here on a case where the author is the assistant.
But see, I think that kind of thing happens all the time in the U.S. Attorney's Office, where the agent comes, has the information, maybe in writing or maybe just something, the agent just knows all the facts and comes to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor then drafts the affidavit, as long as it's the agent that signs it. And it's because it is the agent, and in this case, the agent attested to it, correct?
Yes, he's the signatory or the appliance.
I was just still stuck on that statement that you made earlier that was somehow improper, and just wondered if there was a case that held that.
Since Hampton, I have not heard any testimony in any courtroom concerning any warrant, either in this building or in any building that is run by the federal government, either central or southern district, that the U.S. attorney is the drafter of the application for the search warrant. I've always heard the testimony from the witnesses that it's always been the officer themselves, and
well,
that they seek legal advice.
That's
right.
The difference.
Yeah.
See, they seek legal advice, and they get, you know, well, this paragraph needs to be changed to include that or the other thing, but they don't get somebody. And in modern reality, you virtually must have had an assistant sitting at a computer preparing this document, and then it's handed after it comes out of the printer for changes of a typographical nature, spelling, comma, and I don't think that's what the Supreme Court had in mind when they decided the good faith exception. I think they were dreaming of the ordinary, uneducated police officer at an 8th grade or 12th grade level trying to figure out, well, do I get a warrant that works at night? In the Shepherd case, it was they had a controlled substances warrant form as opposed to a warrant form that would be good for murder. And, you know, I think that's what the Supreme Court was trying to avoid, but not, I don't think any major court in the United States has been called upon to decide the question I'm asking you to look at today. Thank you for your patience with me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Comey. Mr. Bowen?
Good morning. My name is Joe Vaughn. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney who tried this case and who finds himself now in the somewhat embarrassing position of being before the court for having messed up on such an obvious and basic issue as probable cause. However, my mistakes and my shortcomings, of which there are probably more than a few, are not the issue here. The issue in this case is the good faith of Special Agent Vergon, an agent who went the extra mile to obtain an affidavit for a search warrant that would comply with the Fourth Amendment.
How did ATF get involved in this case?
The facts of the motion to suppress established that Special Agent Vergon was contacted the very evening of the fire, and I believe went to the scene that night and then went there in the following days. I do not know. At this time, I cannot recall for Your Honor exactly who may have contacted Special Agent Vergon. Special Agent Vergon, though, comes to the Assistant United States Attorney for assistance in preparing the affidavit.
To you or someone else?
He came to me, Your Honor.
So you're the drafter of the...
Yes, I am.
...of the affidavit.
And he never went to state court trying to get an affidavit.
That's correct.
Okay.
As this court knows in the Leon case itself, where the Supreme Court pronounced the good faith exception, the court noted that three deputy district attorneys in that case had reviewed the affidavit, later found to establish, or later failed to establish probable cause. This court in the Carter decision addressed a situation where you had an affidavit for a search warrant heading no-knock provision that was found to be defective. I believe the language in the opinion, Your Honor, simply states that it identifies the prosecutor and said he helped prepare that affidavit. So we do not know, based on that record, if the prosecutor in that case simply provided oral advice or did some kind of typing. But if the good faith exception applies in a case where an assistant United States attorney or a prosecutor does some oral review of an affidavit and says, probable cause, it's good to go, that really isn't that different from a prosecutor who receives the information from the agent and types it up and says it's good to go. The bottom line is the prosecutor has expressed an opinion, there is probable cause here. The affidavit was then taken, it was sworn to by Special Agent Vergon before a magistrate judge who also expresses the opinion, there's probable cause, you're good to go. Any difference between rendering oral advice in reviewing and actually typing, I would submit, is a difference without distinction.
And are you aware of any cases that would bar that practice? Because I'm assuming that that goes on today, and I recognize we're not looking at today, but the fact of the matter is I think that it's a matter of routine that agents provide the information, the assistants draft the affidavit.
That
are
has
you
been
aware of any cases that prohibit that practice?
No, I am not, Your Honor, and my experience comports with your understanding of what the practice is. The defense arguments that were raised regarding, I believe it's the Hampton case and immunity from prosecution, that was raised for the first time in the reply brief, so I don't think that that's properly before this court. The government would submit that application of the exclusionary rule in this case would not further its deterrent purpose. The Special Agent Vergon did everything he could have to obtain a proper warrant. If it is applied in this case, it would simply have the purpose of deterring agents from seeking assistance from prosecutors, because if they seek such assistance and the warrant is found to be defective, the evidence would be suppressed, whereas if they did it on their own, it would not be suppressed. And officers are to be encouraged to seek assistance from prosecutors in the drafting of affidavits.
It certainly be unusual experience to have agents go directly to a judge to get a warrant without the intervention of a prosecutor.
In the federal system, I would submit that's correct, based on my experience.
Yes.
Yes. At this time, if there are no further questions from the court, the government would stand on its brief in this matter.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boyle.
Thank you.
Mr. Comey, how much time did you have? 1 minute?
Thanks for inviting me back. Nice dinner before lunch.
If I could call upon the great Tina Turner, who is a very popular balladeer, who wrote a song, What's Love Got to Do with It? If we could rewrite that to What's Probable Cause Got to Do with It? If the promise is there must be probable cause and no warrant shall issue, and when the warrant application on its face is devoid of probable cause, and it's so obvious, the officer should have known it, and so should have the legally trained U.S. attorney. And the district judge himself goes on to say, nonetheless, this court expects an assistant United States attorney to aid the court by providing more information than this affidavit allowed before seeking to search a person's residence. It was so obvious to everybody, why should we sustain this search? Why should we take away the promise of the Fourth Amendment? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Comey. And you were appointed, were you not?
No, I wasn't.
No, you were appointed? What? Thank you anyway.
But it's a pleasure to be here and see all of you.
Okay, well, thank you to both counsel, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.